Well, two Charlotte artists with visual impairments are not only creating art, they're finding ways to share that art with other people with and without disabilities. Carmen Papalia lost his sight in college and now describes himself as a non-visual learner. He is artist in residence at the McCall Center for Art and Innovation, and in partnership with UNC Charlotte, his art is social practice, which we'll talk about. It isn't object-based, but rather experience-based, and we'll let him explain that as we go through the rest of the hour. Carmen, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. David Robinson is a UNC Charlotte student doing a double major in dance and exercise science and currently working in a student dance production. Welcome to you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm great. Let me turn your microphone on so we can all hear you. Good morning again.
Good morning.
And we're also joined by Dr. Karen Hubbard, Associate Professor of Dance at UNC Charlotte. Thanks for being here today. Carmen, you described yourself as a non-visual learner. What does that mean?
Well, since I started using a mobility cane when I was 21, I'm 36 now, I started just maybe like interrogating the things that kind of just came standard with that disability identity. So one of the ways that people tend to identify when they use a white cane is they identify as blind or visually impaired or low vision. I mean, all one has to do is type the word blind into dictionary.com and find a list of synonyms, kind of describing the different associations to the term and realize, you know, why one might not want to be called blind. So, I mean, early on, I just started trying to resist those kinds of various ways that I felt positioned by this disability identity and started calling myself or maybe just slowing down the conversation by describing myself as a non-visual learner.
And from what I've read about your work, you're actually a non-visual teacher.
That's right. I'm here through a teaching residency through the McCall Center. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm teaching a class at UNC. I'm teaching an installation class. And what my students are doing right now is reconstructing an environment that they experienced with eyes closed.
Okay. How did you lose your... Because you were 21, you said, when you lost your
eyes? Yeah.
How did you lose your sight?
Well, it's a hereditary condition. I don't usually use like medicalizing language to describe myself. So like whenever you think about those standard things, the questions that people ask, like, you know, I get asked all the time, when did you lose your sight? And I often first say, you know, I don't think of it as a loss, because I think when I shifted the value from the visual to the non-visual, my world opened up in a sense. I feel like I just, you know, I was able to identify different kind of different experiences that I wasn't privy to while I was focusing on the visual.
We're going to talk about your art and what you're doing, the kind of experiential art that you're creating and how other people can experience it and enjoy it. We'll also talk to Davian Robinson, who is a dancer without sight, and Dr. Karen Hubbard, who's an associate professor of dance. But we have to take a break, and we'll do that now. We'll come back with more in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to artists who are by necessity working in a different way, both in experiential art, which we'll talk about as social practice art in just a moment, and also dance. Let me bring in Davian Robinson to this conversation. You're a double major at UNC Charlotte, dance and exercise science. I understand you were sighted until age 7 or 6 in somewhere in that neighborhood?
Yes.
Were you a dancer at all prior to that? I was pretty young, so were you a dancer at all prior to that?
No, I was, when I was young, around 7, when my vision started to deteriorate, I didn't dance, but I did athletics, rec ball, coach pitch, things of that nature, so I didn't start dancing until I was 12.
So what got you into dance? I would think at the age of 6, you really hadn't been exposed all that much to dance. You didn't know what it was. So
well,
what got you into it?
I would say I remember when I was 7, there was one point when I was at a party or something as a kid. There was like a dance contest thing. And I really, It's like I entered it. I didn't know what I was doing. It was just a thing. I was like, okay. It was like a talent show thing. I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, I did it, and all I knew was dance. I think it's because I saw things on TV or watching Michael Jackson on videos or something. It was cool. So, or breakdancing videos or something I was watching. I don't know what it, remember what it was, but I think from that point, I was curious, but I never, it was not a thought as I got older.
There's a company, I believe it's on the West Coast, of dancers, and part of what they do for people who don't have sight, who are in their audience, is provide them with essentially dolls that they can move the arms and legs and the bodies around so that they can feel what the dancers look like when they're in certain dance positions. How do you know what you're supposed to do? You're a choreographer too, right?
Yes.
So how do you know what you're doing, and how do you know if your dancers are doing what you have told
okay.
them to
yeah.
do?
Okay, so right now I just got finished with a residency. I'm in a student performance this semester. I mean, not student performance, a staff performance, and I got casted in a piece done by a professional artist, Marcus White, and I have what is known as a dance mentor that Dr. Kevin Hubbard came up with my first semester here at UC Charlotte back in 2016 in the spring, and to help me navigate the space. Now, I'm no longer a visual learner. I'm more of a hands-on and auditorial learner, so movements. Since I have a background in tap and ballet, I am familiar with movement. And so what happens is there's movements, whether it be hands up, hands to the right, hands, you know, foot out to the right, or, you know, it's very descriptive in nature. As far as my dancers, it's most of my dances I come up with are improv-based to the point where it's sometimes structured. It doesn't always have to look a certain way for me, and I always have an overseer, like someone, a spotter, to say, you know, give me visual cues. Okay, what's this look like? What are you seeing? Because what the image of in my head looks like is totally different from
sure.
what it outwardly looks like.
So, Davian just mentioned you, Dr. Karen Hubbard, associate professor of dance. Is he the first, and I don't, excuse me, but I'm not sure what term you want me to use, non-visual. Is he the first non-visual dancer you've worked with?
Absolutely. I've had visually impaired students, but Davian was a very new experience. And the challenge was trying to find a way to include him in the class and in the courses. And I came up with the idea of I call it a movement mentor or a dance mentor.
How does that work?
So this person has to have had the course before. So they're familiar with the material. They're not learning the material and trying to help Davian at the same time. So they've already had the course. And they stick with Davian throughout the entire class, and they give him vocal cues and a hands-on manipulation.
So they actually help position you in a certain way.
If
arms are supposed to be out straight and to the left, they'll make sure that you understand what that feels like so that you'll be in sync with everybody else.
Yes.
Big challenge for everybody?
I would say it's a really big challenge. Going from a visual learner to seeing all the choreography to having to trust someone who's skilled, you know, versed in what they're doing. It was a really hard challenge. But once I got to the point where I could trust them and that what they were telling me was great, you know, they're telling me, okay, you look good. Keep going. You know, you're doing it right. No, this way, turn this way a little bit, or you need to relax here, you know, put a little bit more attention here, just different little things. It is a challenge, you know, so yeah.
So Carmen Papalia is also with us. He was with us in the last segment. He's here now, disability activist, artist in residence at the McCall Center for Art and Innovation. And you are a social practice artist. And I've got to tell you, I've never heard of that before yesterday. But Harold Fletcher, who directs the concentration at Portland State, where I believe you went to school, describes it in terms of what it isn't. He says it is the opposite of studio practice. It's not all about the artist, and it isn't assumed that work will go into a gallery. It doesn't have a look like cubism or pop art, and it has no central message like expressionism or surrealism. So can you please, because I don't know what any of that means, can you please describe what it is?
I think of it as an approach to art making that is very community-based. So instead of working on an object like in a studio, so making maybe a sculpture or an installation, you're working with people. I really think of it as a way of expressing my politics. I mean, a social practice, I feel, is the way that one interacts with the social space and people in their community. So I really just describe it as like a strategy, an approach, an ongoing kind of process that I'm continuously in, which is just like navigating various spaces, expressing my needs, making... identifying various things that I might need to bring someone else in.
So it's very easy to understand it as activism. It's very easy to understand what you do as providing experiences for those who don't have sight or for those who do but want to understand what it is like to not have sight. But what makes it art?
Well, I don't even think I'd categorize my work as being for, you know, I don't think people are assuming my position when they are shutting their eyes, say, like I do this walking tour where people line up behind me and link arms and shut their eyes. And I don't think of it really as a simulation of my experience, because I think that there's part of that that people cannot access. I think of it more as just time spent, intentional time spent with eyes shut, exercise for the non-visual senses, because I feel like I've had a lot of time to exercise those senses, and that's the way like I navigate my surroundings. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just pretty much bringing people into a space that I feel comfortable in. And so, yeah, I would say that my work is a form of activism, but I think it operates differently, because I think you can achieve something different through creative practice that you can't by standing in protest.
So your work has been featured in exhibitions at the Whitney Museum of American Art, the LA Craft and Folk Art Museum, and elsewhere. Is your work here part of what has been called the Open Access Project?
Yes.
Talk about that.
So in the last couple of years, I have been on this movement building campaign for what I call open access. In 2015, I wrote 5 tenets, like guiding principles for this intentional space. It's really just like a proposal. It's a conceptual framework. So 5 short paragraphs that kind of like describe a space that doesn't really exist and unless people really make it. And really, it's just like a flipping of the or an inversion of the typical policy-based model for accessibility. Usually when someone, you know, is seeking support, they're engaging an accommodation. It's also like, you know, it's based in policies. You're usually talking about the disability community. Open access is more like thinking about how power is distributed within a system, how that relates to one's agency or freedom of movement within a system. So it's not necessarily about the disability community specifically, but more about like the various ways, the social, cultural, political conditions that might obstruct one's agency.
So why choose a pathway through the world of art for that, as opposed to simply a pathway through the world of social activism and consciousness raising, for lack of a better term, or politics for that matter?
I mean, I feel like that's those are the spaces that I can access, like awareness raising, shifting perceptions, and also cultural shifts. I think within institutions, I'm able to work, you know, so this open access movement building campaign, I've been introducing this new framework that I developed. It's really just a piece of writing that really directs people away or maybe in sort of different ways in connecting with others and making person-to-person agreements for support. So I've actually been introducing this model to, you know, staff at museums, at universities, at city departments. So I'm actually able to, working as an artist within the museum system and in galleries, like, you know, kind of move into different spaces, you know, whether it be kind of like, you know, city government. I talk to policymakers as well, but I think that's like a really slow game. Yeah. So
you might reach more people more quickly through this avenue, is what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Davian, you're a dancer, and I'm curious about how somebody without sight experiences dance.
Yeah, but I experience dance very, very differently than I could ever think. A lot of times when we think of dance, there's this ballet, there's a structure to it, there's modern, there's a structure to it. There's this element of dance where it's more than just the aesthetic look of it, than more so it's what it feels like. And when when dancers as artists are here to express emotions, come up with choreography or stories to tell through dance, from my perspective, it's all about inwardly more so than outwardly. If we as people and individuals can get past the comparisons, the perfections, the insecurities that we all sometimes hold due to the perceived stigmas and that are put on us by societal pressures, then we can be free of that, to be able to dance the dance of dance and to bring art to its fullest potential as an artist.
There are a lot of fully sighted people, Dr. Hubbard, who think they're executing the choreography that they've been told to execute, but in fact are not, which is why the choreographer has to continually say, no, straighten that arm, straighten your back, do something else, because that's not what everybody else is doing. And that's a challenge for fully sighted people. Is there any real difference here? Because you're not even a fully sighted person, unless they're standing in front of a mirror, is not seeing precisely what they're doing.
Well, I think in the end, for the dancer, for the expressive dancer, the movement comes from the inside out. Mm. So Davian, you know, has a handle on how he approaches the work, and it would be helpful if young dancers could learn how to do that, to experience movement from the inside out. But the thing is that we're all hung up on looking at the mirror. How do we look in the mirror instead of trying to experience the movement from the inside out?
Carmen talks about disrupting the social, cultural, and political conditions that, these are his words, obstruct the agency of one who is visually impaired. And I would imagine the presence of a visually impaired dancer in a company of other dancers provides that disruption rather quickly. What has the inclusion of Davian in your company meant to the company?
I think to dancers in the class and to dancers in the performance practicum, my observation is that he is included in the work. I don't see them distracted by him being there with a movement mentor. I feel like they are protective of him if necessary, but I don't feel like they're apprehensive that he's going to bump into them or anything. It has been such an enriching experience. When he first came to my class, I was trying to find out how to accommodate him, and I found information on courses that were totally made up of visually impaired students. But this is very different. We are including him in the class as a regular student, and it has worked. It's wonderful.
You're also a cyclist and a Paralympian. Is that correct, David?
Yes, I'm a paracyclist and a Paralympic hopeful. Yes, I compete nationally around the country in paracycling. I'm ranked third in the nation on the track and on the road as a tandem cyclist. And last summer, I competed in the 2016 Rio Games and missed going. But I am shooting for the 2020 Paralympic Games in Tokyo, and I have my national championships coming up at the first week of December. So it's been a really awesome ride to look at all of that plus my dance and really seeing the benefits of it.
Wow.
As a cross-sectional thing.
Susan in Indian Trail emails, I'm a visually impaired poet, and my first book will be published next year, and it feels like vindication. Hopefully others in my situation can find validation while others can further their understanding. Glad to know there are other local artists doing the same thing. Thank you both for being here. You can get more information about both the dance and some of the things that Carmen Papalia is doing with his open access demonstration at our website at wfae.org. Thanks.
Thank you.